Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
Well, as apartheid was ending in the 1990s, a new national hero, a new sporting hero was emerging in South Africa. His name was Hansie Cronje. A batting genius, an outspoken Christian, he captained South Africa's cricket team to the top of the world ladder. But Cronje's fame came crashing down in the year 2000, I'm sure you remember it, and stories emerged of his involvement with Indian bookmakers. Even more devastating was the plane crash a couple of years later that ended his life at just 32 years of age. Now Hansie's story has been made into a feature film written and produced by his older brother Franz, and surprisingly, given the fact that it's a fairly sad story, this is actually a movie of hope. Franz in Australia at the moment, launching the film, and he's with us now. Franz, welcome.
Hey, how are you doing, Sheridan?
I'm doing very well. It's good to have you here.
Yeah, fantastic being here.
I would imagine that this movie has been not just simply a labour of love for you, but also a pretty intense emotional experience as when you are so close to the subject matter that you're actually writing and then recording about.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, making a movie about a family member of yours. More interesting than if your own character is also in the movie. It's kind of hard to cast someone to play yourself. But this was our second movie that we produced. The first movie was called Faith Like Potatoes. It was a true story of a farmer called Angus Buchan in South Africa. And that became a box office success in South Africa, and it's fairly well known in Australia as well by now. And that prepared me. I think that really helped a lot to be able to produce Hansie. But, you know, making a movie about Hansie was, I think, a great privilege, first of all, but also difficult in many ways. First of all, I had to get all of my family on board. At the time that we started developing it, you know, the wounds were still very raw. It was still very difficult. Because of all of the negative media around the world, you know, the family members thought, you know, is it really worth making the movie? But the fact that Faith Like Potatoes did so well, I think encouraged my mum and dad and Bertha and my sister that it's worth going through the pain of producing the movie because of the effect that it, the positive effect that it has on people.
Right.
My parents and Bertha needed to have the peace that it was going to be worth the pain.
This is the right thing to do.
Yeah, we released a biography on him, on Hansie, in 2005, and I think the reaction from people was great. You know, it really changed people's lives. It gave people not only a well-balanced view of Hansie's life, but it gave them an insight into their own lives. I think, you know, we released the Hansie movie in South Africa towards the end of last year, and that definitely has been the feedback, is that yeah. people were able to see themselves.
Were you and Hansie close as brothers?
Yeah, definitely. I'm 2 years older than Hansie, and we have a sister that was a year younger than Hansie. And we were always a close-knit family. Both my parents are still alive. And I can never remember, can't remember any stage in our lives where we didn't get on. You know, we had our fights in the backyard. Growing up, we played cricket, you know, with Alan Donald and Nicky Bouyer. And Alan was just as fast when he was young as he was when he played for South Africa. So we had many fights in the backyard, especially playing rugby, not so much playing cricket. But we were close. And I think that helped to support Hansie through the difficult times of the King Commission after the scandal, but it made it also really tough when he passed away. Fortunately, I had complete closure of his death, you know, so I never felt that I needed closure of his death. But, I, you know, there are times when I still really miss him.
I bet you do. When you look over Hansie's life, how would you sum up what he left, his legacy? How would you sum it up?
I think maybe Hansie's biggest attribute, his best attribute, was to encourage people and to motivate people. He was an incredible motivator of people, and that made him such a successful captain. On the DVD that we produced, we also have about a four-hour documentary on Hansie interviewing 65 people that were close to him and many of his teammates. And that's one thing Gary Kirsten and John T. Rhodes and Andrew Hudson, Sean Pollock, all of them said is Hansie made them perform better than what they thought they were. He made them believe they could be better than what they actually thought they were. And I think that is the legacy that he left, not just in his teammates or his friends, but also in the nation of South Africa. And I'd like to think a little bit wider than that as well. You know, you can still walk anywhere in India today and people, when you say Hansie, just love to talk about him. I think, unfortunately, for all of the successes he had in his life, the one thing people immediately remember when you say his name is the scandal. You know, so how on earth could he get involved with the things that he did? He really loved the Lord. He was a man of integrity. He had great principles. And yet, he took money from Indian bookmakers. He did what was wrong. But I think what was good in that process as well is that in the way that he rectified his problems, in the way he repented and turned away from that and then started to rebuild his life, I think that was also inspirational. And in itself, that was a good legacy.
This is Open House right across the nation. Franz Cronier is with us, brother of the well-known Hansi Cronier, the legendary cricketer. And Franz is a movie maker and has actually produced a movie called Hansi, actually about his brother's life, theopenhouse.net.au for the podcast of our chat with Franz. Let's get to the big moment that everybody remembers Hansi for, unfortunately. Let's get to that. Let's move beyond it. That moment on the year 2000, in fact, you were telling me earlier on that it was actually on the day of Hansi and Beta, his wife's first wedding anniversary, the day that he actually got the phone call to say the allegations have been made. Where did Hansi go wrong?
Yeah, it was actually on their fifth wedding anniversary that he got a call, and, you know, he early on denied all of it, but for about 3 days, and he just couldn't sleep. And I think eventually his conscience just got the better of him, and he realized he's going to have to confess and come out with it, even if it's going to cost him his career. I think the best summary of why he went wrong, he couldn't even answer that question, by the way. You know, we spoke about it often. But a clinical psychologist, Anne Varmenhoeven, back home in South Africa, did a study on Hansi that she was going to do for a master's degree. It ended up such an in-depth study that her professors then encouraged her to split it in two. So she's now Dr. Anne Varmenhoeven. And I asked her, you know, where did he go wrong? Why did he do what he did? And she said he got too busy. That's the biggest thing she got out of it.
It sounds too simple, doesn't it?
Yeah.
He got too busy.
Yeah, and the way she explained it was he was a person of immensely high emotional intelligence. And usually people that are very high in emotional intelligence have the ability to look at their own lives regularly. You know, they take time out, they assess their lives, kind of like having quiet time when you're a Christian, having quiet time with God, reading, praying, meditating about it. Look at what you've done wrong, correcting it. Look at what you've done right and be better in it. So every week you kind of become better and better. And that was Hansi. And that was the South African cricket side under his captaincy as well. They were the seventh best in the world. At the time he took over, they had lost 13 one-day internationals in a row. And yet he then took them to becoming the best in the world leading up to the 99 Cricket World Cup. But then there came a time around about 97 where he had his benefit season and many other things. Also, he was very driven. He was very ambitious. Being ambitious maybe played a role. Being adventurous played another role because, you know, I think being on tour for such a long time, you become bored and you could get involved in things you shouldn't. But the biggest thing was he became so busy. He only slept at home for 28 nights during that year. And what Dr. Varmenhoeven said is that when you become so busy, you don't correct your mistakes the whole time. And then when you have to make gut decisions, you make them wrong. Instead of making them with your normal value system, you don't use your value system to make the decisions, you make wrong decisions. Also, when you look at the way that the bookies got Hansi involved, they didn't just one day pitch up there and say, here's $200,000, throw a game. They start with something small, get you involved, try and get you and hook you in. And in a very clever way, they got him involved for doing something that wasn't that wrong. It was wrong, yeah, but it wasn't that wrong. You know, and that in itself was a big lesson as well, that we should be very careful. You know, when there are little white lies, little things that are wrong, they grow until one day you realize, man, I'm in too deep.
Yes.
And that's what happened with Hansi. You know, by the time he got in too deep, it was really in too deep.
And then when he's busy, I can't remember who it was who said it, but they said, you know, if the devil can't tempt you directly, he'll certainly keep you either occupied or certainly very, very busy.
Yeah.
And it's so true, isn't it, that when you have that temptation, you're a very, very busy person. It's very hard to have the resources then to confront that. There's one stage in the Hansi movie where you have Hansi's saying, through the actor, "Throughout my life I've had a love of money, and I believe this contributed to my downfall." Did you see that much as you were growing up with Hansi? Did you see that love of money kind of surfacing?
Yeah, that was an interesting one. Hansi, after the King Commission, said if he was able to speak in Afrikaans, our home language, he would have been able to explain himself maybe a little bit better than speaking in English. I think what he meant there was he was always a good businessman. I don't think he was ever stingy. I don't think he was ever... I didn't see his love of money being bad. You know, I always admired him for being a good businessman. Mm-hmm. He ran his finances really well, even as a young man. You know, when we were all going out at university, enjoying our lives, he already had a portfolio and all sorts of investment portfolio. Yeah. So I saw it in a positive light. But what he meant there was that at one point in time, he took his eyes off the Lord, and financial success became more important than doing the right things, became more important than the relationships around him. You know, being so busy, he didn't spend enough time at home with his wife. We didn't see each other that much. You know, his friends didn't see him that much. And also, Pastor Ray McCauley, who played a big role in Hansi's life, he couldn't connect with Hansi that much at that stage. You know, so
all the telltale signs. When you actually start to be disconnected from all of those people that actually either keep you accountable or keep you grounded. That's
definitely,
you become very vulnerable.
And at the same time, he becomes such a high-profile person in South Africa that, you know, when you're so high profile, it becomes even harder to confess to doing things wrong. You know, it becomes harder to talk to someone and have someone in confidence that you could say, listen, help me a bit, I've done this, or help me a bit, I've done that.
Yeah.
You kind of feel too proud or too bad to do it.
Sure.
You know, and I think that's a major lesson for leaders all around the world, Christian leaders and non-Christian leaders. Try and have someone that you could speak to. And then the other lesson is not to put people on pedestals. You know, don't put people up there on that high platform. By any means, have role models and heroes, but man, they're not gods, they're people.
Yeah, I remember I was at a radio station in Perth when the news broke of Hansi's dealings. And we were devastated. And also, it was really interesting because we had a closet and we had them filled with sports Bibles with a number of testimonies of people actually in there. And of course, you know, Hansi was one of them.
I remember that.
We were thinking we couldn't actually give the Bible out anymore. And it got us all thinking, well, how much should we actually have? And even a program like this, where we often have profile people talking about their faith, we've always got to keep in mind they're still human beings. And for those of us of a Christian faith who actually are listening, we still got to make sure it's the person of Jesus who is the one who will never fail. All of us to some degree will let him down in some way, shape or form, although that's not an excuse for living an immoral life.
I mean, just going back to our previous movie Faith Like Potatoes, that farmer Angus Buchan, his ministry has grown so much over the last few years that last year he had 65,000 men on his farm for a weekend men's retreat. This year they're preparing for over 200,000 men. He speaks to millions of people in South Africa now. And you know what's been so great with Angus is he's kept some strong men around him. He's got an intercessory team praying for him, but he's remained a humble person. 25 years ago, when he moved to South Africa, he built a house with poles and mud and a tin roof. And he still lives in that same house. You know, being famous, being influential hasn't changed him. He's remained humble. And I think that is a great lesson for us to keep humility.
Yes.
And to be real about our own weaknesses as well.
Yes. Franz Cronje is a filmmaker. He has made a film about his well-known brother, Hansi Cronje. So tell me about the faith that Hansi actually had. Tell me how deep did it run?
Hansi loved the Lord. He really gave his life to the Lord back in 91 or 92, I think it was. And at that stage, I mean, we grew up going to church. In the environment where we grew up, none of our friends didn't go to church. It was just, that was the
culturally
tradition.
Acceptable.
That's culturally, that was the thing to do. Mm. Neither him nor me ever thought, you know, ever doubted that there was a God. But when we played our first season of league cricket, professional cricket in England, Hansi was over there in the same season that I was there for the first time. And it was interesting because Hansi had just come back from Australia where we were back into international sport for the first time. South Africa did really well at the Cricket World Cup here. We beat Australia in the opening match. I think it was at the SCG. It was a tremendous time for us. You know, Hansi, he was young. He was 22 years old. Jonty Rhodes was young. All of those guys were there. you know, you could kind of say he's now achieved what we always wanted to achieve. And yet he got to England feeling empty. It was interesting having a barbecue. In South Africa, we call it a braai. It's like a barbecue, only better.
I love it. I've got South African friends, and they give me some beautiful braai.
We were having a braai on one Monday at lunchtime. It's great being a professional cricketer because you only work over weekends. And I said to Hans, you know, look at the British. They're so ungodly. They've got the most beautiful cathedrals and churches and chapels, and they're all empty. There are no more congregations in them. I was being very self-righteous and hypocritical. And Hansi looked at me and he said, but aren't we the same? Our body is supposed to be a temple of God, but isn't it just as empty as those cathedrals and churches? And I felt so bad. It immediately hit me, and I realized that, man, here I was being critical of the English, and my own life was just so far from being in order. The only difference between me and the guys on my team was that I went to church on a Sunday, they didn't. But in my behavior, in everything, there was absolutely no difference. And then when we went back to South Africa after that season, a little Zulu girl ran from behind a taxi while Hansi was driving on a motorway. And she ran straight in front of Hansi's car. And she was killed in the accident. And that really shook Hansi's life. It was really difficult for him. But in that process, he met his wife, Bertha. Well, didn't meet her, but he started dating at that stage. And she helped him a lot. And in that time, he gave his life to the Lord. And his life really changed. We could see such a tremendous change in his life. And he became outspoken as well as a Christian. You know, it wasn't until years after that I gave my life to the Lord eventually.
Is that right?
Yeah.
But through him? Was there a role that he played in that?
I wouldn't say directly, but indirectly, we could see the change in him. And that was inspirational, not just to me or to close family, but to a nation. You know, we all looked up to Hansi, and not just Hansi, but John T. Rhodes, Andrew Hudson, all of those guys that became major role models at a very difficult time in South African history. You know, it was the change of apartheid. There were lots of change. People were looking for things and people to hold on to. And, you know, where Nelson Mandela became president and such a wonderful leader, there were one or two other people that became just massive heroes. Francois Pienaar, the rugby captain, one of them. Hansi as a cricket captain, another one. You know, and I think we looked up to these guys.
That is fascinating. We really can't take away the historical context that actually Hansi's fame rose within, and then the hopes that were actually played on him. So then with that faith that obviously was very, very sincere, we've already talked about the temptations that then he finally succumbed to. Tell us what none of us ever saw then. Tell me about the aftermath of Hansi's dealings, etc., becoming public. Tell me what happened after that. He went through a very, very low time of a lot of depression. Mm-hmm. What happened from that point on?
Yeah, I think first of all, Bertha, his wife, was just incredible. She was like a shining light in all of this dark time that Hansi had. You know, unfortunately, Hansi just locked himself in at home for most of that time. He almost didn't go out at all. At that stage,
he felt like the whole world was
looking at him. He thought the whole world was against him. Because being at home, the only thing he saw was newspapers and television reports. And those were very negative.
Like the cricket fans down, the Christians are going, hang on, a man of God has actually fallen like this. And the world is watching.
He thought he had let the whole world down. Yeah. And again, you know, speaking to Bob Wilmer, the former South African coach, I spoke to Bob just before Bob actually passed away, and I said, summarize Hansi in a few sentences. And he said Hansi wanted to be the best captain, the best Christian, the best batsman, the best husband, the best everything. And it's impossible again. You can't be the best everything. But he wanted to be. And then when he had made those mistakes, it was so difficult, he couldn't forgive himself. He was such a perfectionist that he just couldn't get over it, that he had fallen so far to take money from those bookies. Like Peter Pollock said at the funeral as well, you know, like the prodigal son, he ended up in the pigsty. How on earth could I sink this far? But the fantastic thing is then he called Peter, you know, eventually after 18 months. And Peter sat him down and he managed to speak to him. I think, first of all, quite harshly, you know, and said, listen, you got to take responsibility as well. It wasn't just a mistake, it was sin, it was wrong. And Hansi never blamed anyone. He accepted full responsibility. But then Peter said to him, but now you got to remember, you got to forgive yourself. Now you got to keep your eyes on the Lord. And I think what helped Hansi there as well is that when we go into times of depression, we begin to look so much inwards that it becomes a downward spiral. You know, you just go deeper and deeper and deeper. But if you can somehow keep your eyes on other people's problems and begin to help them, begin to look outwards, that's where God begins to give you the words and the heart and the encouragement to help other people. And that's what Hansie did. He always had a great heart to help underprivileged kids.
Well, he's working in India. Yeah.
And his wife, Bertha, at that stage, were working at a handicapped school for physically handicapped and mentally handicapped kids. And Hansie just became involved there. You know, he would coach them. He would take them away on trips. He would sleep in school hostels to be with the kids and help them. And that played a big role in him getting just out of that depressed state. And, you know, when I saw Hansie 2 weeks before he died, the old Hansie was back. Mm-hmm. You know, he really looked great again.
This is Open House Across the Nation. Franz Cronje is with us, a filmmaker who's just released a film, Hansie, on his well-known brother, Hansie Cronje. 2 years later, after all of these his dealings are made public, and that's the bit, I think that's the day. I'm not even a big cricket fan, by the way, Franz. Mm-hmm. And you think that's the day that I went, what's going on here, when I heard the news that Hansie had actually been in the plane and it had gone down. Mm-hmm. It was shocking. It really was shocking. I can only imagine what it must have been like for you personally as his brother.
Yeah, it was an immensely tough day. 1st of June 2002. We woke up early one Saturday morning. It was cold and raining in Cape Town. And my cousin called and said, we got to pray, Hansie's plane has gone missing. I said, what do you mean? You know, she said, no, he missed his flight the previous night. He hitched a ride on a mail plane, a courier plane that flew down to where Bertha was. And they were supposed to land an hour ago and there's no sight of the plane. I said, well, you know, Hansie, you know, he can get himself in trouble. He gets himself out. An hour later, we still had no news. And I couldn't sit still. I got in the car. I said to my wife, I'm going to drive through to George, where Hansie was living at that stage. It's 4 hours drive from Cape Town. And my phone started ringing. I think news began to get out there to the media. I mean, I had calls from, Alan Donald called me from England. I had press calling me from India and from Australia, from everywhere. And about an hour into my journey, I finally got word that this plane had crashed. They found it on a mountain nearby. And an hour later, they called again to say that Hansie was dead. They managed to get down to where the wreckage was. And him and the two pilots, none of them survived. Mm. And then I had to call my parents. I had to call Bertha, all the family, and tell them that. Mm. That was the toughest thing I ever had to do. Mm. And then my cell phone battery went flat with another 2 hours of the trip left. And I started speaking to the Lord. I said, Lord, now that I can't speak on my phone, I'll chat to you. I'm not rebellious, I promise you, but I would have done things slightly different. That's what I said to the Lord. Yeah. Because we all thought that after all Hansie had gone through, now he was going to do this or he's going to do that. And yet, here the Lord comes and takes him away. And the Lord said two things to me. He said, first of all, it's not for any human to know what's going to happen tomorrow. You know, Jesus said in the book of Matthew, seek first my kingdom today. Don't worry about tomorrow, but seek my kingdom today, and I will provide everything for tomorrow. And that was just such a wonderful reminder again that we can honestly fully rely on God for everything. We don't have to worry about tomorrow. And then secondly, the Lord said to me, you're also getting just as busy as Hansie was. Stop doing everything. Just do the one thing you're supposed to do. Do that well, and things will go well with you. I had to go identify his body the following day when they managed to retrieve it from the crash site. And walking into the police station, I didn't know what to expect. But I had tremendous peace when I walked in there. As soon as I saw Hansie, it was a peaceful experience that it wasn't him, he's already gone. That body that was lying there is our temporary body, our earthly vessel, is not who we are. Our lives are spiritual. Our spirit is our life. Once that spirit is gone, our life is over. But that spirit lives forever. Mm. And Hansie was with the Lord. Mm. You know, he had managed to fix his relationship with the Lord. The Lord had given him 2 years grace in order to fix everything on earth that he had to fix. Yeah. Fix his relationship with a lot of people and also get to spend more time with Bertha. Yeah. And I felt that he was always going to die on the 1st of June 2002. That was his time to go home. So his life was finished. It was complete at the age of 32. We all live for different lengths of time. We don't know how long we're going to live. What's important is that we know that before we die, that we sort out our relationship with the Lord. The scary thing is we don't know how long we're going to live. So it's best you sort out your relationship with
now,
the Lord today.
Today, yeah. Absolutely. There's a really interesting point in the movie where Hansi is up in front of a church giving his testimony, giving his Christian story to the congregation. And he actually says something along the lines of, you know, I fly a lot, and I know that if I was to be in a plane that, you know, would crash, I know that I'd actually be able to meet my maker.
Yeah, he said that back in 1994. Factual.
That actually is factual. Mm-hmm. We were trying to work, Claire and I were talking about it. It's like, you know, was that maybe just a creative flourish or something that you've actually... No, it actually is a historical statement he made.
We had a long discussion before making the movie whether we should include it or not, because it could sound a bit cheesy, you know, that doesn't sound right.
Does it ring true?
Yeah, he said it back in 94.
Actually
not testifying in a church, but being interviewed by a magazine, a Christian magazine in South Africa called The Joy Magazine. You know, so he really did say that more or less 10 years before he died.
Do you see any significance in that?
Yeah, I think it just, you know, to me, there are a couple of things that we don't speak about at church that I think we should speak about more, you know, or in everyday life. We don't speak about death. Death is part of life on earth. Unfortunately, it is. Because of sin, people die, and we need to be prepared for it. We need to know two things in life you're going to do. You're going to pay tax and you're going to die. But we can celebrate people passing away when they know the Lord, because we know they're going to be with the Lord and we're going to see them one day again. But because we don't prepare people, it's always really tough when they lose people close to them, and then we want to counsel them. So I think we should start counseling people, you know, about it before people die around us. You know, and also, are you ready to die? You know, the reason Hansi gave his life to the Lord in 92 and the reason I gave my life to the Lord in 96 was something inside of me just asked the question, if I die tonight, where am I going? And I wasn't sure. And I thought, okay, I better find out. I better find out if I'm ready to die, because I didn't feel ready. And that's an important question you have to be able to answer.
Yes, yes. You think of those words of Jesus to the criminal crucified right next to him. Today you will be with me in paradise.
Wasn't it just as beautiful at the funeral? Because the short, like, we have a summarized version of the funeral in the movie. And again, word for word, what was actually said at the funeral, where Peter Pollock spoke. And Peter said, last Saturday, Hansi made alternative arrangements to go home. Ironically enough, he did arrive home on top of that mountain. He is home now. He is with Jesus, experiencing the peace and the joy that's beyond all understanding. And that, we felt, tied in so nicely with what Hansi said back in 1994, that we thought that's important to actually have in the movie.
Yes. Well, Franz, fascinating to talk to you. Thanks for coming by, and all the best with the movie.
Yeah, thank you very much, Sheridan. Now, it's going to be interesting to see what the Australian public think of the movie. The South Africans have really enjoyed it, and thus far, the few Australians that have seen the movie seem to have enjoyed it.
Yeah, so it's very well made. It's very well produced. You've done a wonderful job on it.
Yeah, and by the way, we lose again to Australia in the 99 World Cup. In fact, we didn't lose, we drew, but because we didn't win, Australia went through and won the World Cup. That's still such a sore point for South Africans that when we filmed the movie, we actually shot an alternate ending to the 99 World Cup where we won. It's on the DVD if you want to have a look at it.
So the rest is non-fiction, but that might have actually been fiction. Hey, Franz, good to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Bye.
Yeah, Franz Cronje there, a filmmaker, brother of the late cricket great Hansi Cronje. And the film is called Simply Hansi.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.